Okay, let's try again. This week is Parshas Bamidbar. Parshas Bamidbar begins with a very beautiful Rashi. Rashi says, Vaydaber Bamidbar Sinai Bechalachodesh Mitoich Chibosan Lefonav Moyle Oysam Kol Shah. The beginning of the parasha begins with HaKadosh Baruch Hu counting Klal Yisrael. And Rashi is asking a question, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu counting the Jewish people again? He already counted us before. He already counted us two other times. So Rashi answers, Mitoich Chibosan Lefana, because the Jewish people are beloved before Hashem, Moine Oysam Kol Sha'ah, Hashem continuously counts them. And he gives you examples. Number one, Kishayatsu Mimitrayim Mina'on. In Shemois, in Perik Yud Beis, Hashem counted them when they left Egypt. Number two, Uchashem Naflu Be'egel. Again, in Shemois, Perik Lamed Beis, Hashem counted when they fell in the Egel. After the aftermath of the Egel, there was a Magefa, and Bnei Levi came forward to punish, to take the lives of the perpetrators. Those who were Oivdei Avodah Zarah, so there was a diminishment in the number of the Jewish people, they were counted again.
Casualty report.
Leida tino minyan hanoisarim. Uchashabo lahashoi shchinosai aleihem minoam. And now is the next counting. Now when the Mishkan has been assembled, been put up, put into order, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now coming to bestow his divine presence upon the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now going to count them once again. Be'echad b'nisan, hukam ha-mishkan, be'echad b'yir min'am. And now again, the release of force, and then, achshabal l'hashre shchinas aleihem, min'am, Be'echad b'nisan hukam ha-mishkan, uve'echad b'iyar minam. This is the third. So this is the third time. The third time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was counting them again when they put up the Mishkan. So sach hakol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu over here is counting Klal Yisrael three times. Rashi is coming to mention a triple count of Klal Yisrael. Number one, when he took us out of Mitzrayim. Number two, when we were nichshol in the Chet HaEgel, and that caused a magefa, a mulchama, and the Jewish people were diminished, they suffered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to count them again to know the number of survivors, if we can say, use that term. And then the third time Hashem counted us is when he came to, when we built the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was now about to bring down his divine presence to rest permanently in the Mishkan. Okay, that's Rashi's introduction to this week's parsha. Every parsha has a haftorah. What is the haftorah of this week's parsha? We read from Hosea. Hosea was a very interesting person. We learned Sefer Hosea. And Hosea, he made a mistake in being extremely critical of the Jewish people. He basically said to Hashem that, Ribbono Shel Olam, I think it's about time you cut your losses. And, you know, maybe you should find someone else who's more loyal to you than the Jewish people. Hosea was a very frustrated prophet. He saw the Jewish people are stubborn and they just don't know how to follow the rules. And he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe the time has come, it's time to move on. Cut your losses and let's move on and get yourself a new nation that will obey. So Hashem said to Hosea, Chaval, you just don't get it. You just don't understand. You know what we're going to do? I want to put you in my shoes. I want you to feel what it's like. And then you'll tell me, then you'll tell me what to do. You should see what I'm going through. And the way we're going to do this is, I want you to get married. I want you, you're a bachor. I don't know if he was a bachor, he had another wife. I want you to, and you know, I'm not going to give you a good shidduch. I want you to go marry a zoyna. I want you to marry a woman that's not going to be faithful. And Hoshea went, he married a woman that wasn't exactly, you know, the shamnu psalta of the Jewish people. She wasn't exactly the best Beis Yaakov girl in Lakewood. I bet you never heard that one before.
No.
Right? Okay, you heard it here. He didn't give her exactly the best Beis Yaakov girl in Lakewood. He gave her a girl that I don't think his parents would be very proud to marry. He married a zoyna. And they had three children. Three children. And Hashem actually told Hoshea what to name the children. Don't listen to your shver and your shviga and your parents. I will give you the names of your children. And the first child he called Loi Ruchama. Okay, I don't have everything in front of me now, so I'm just going to tell you the basic names. Okay, the first child he called Loi Ruch. One of the children he called Loi Ruchama. And what is that word? What does that mean? It means I will not show compassion on the Jewish people. They're evil. They're sinners. And I want you to reflect that by naming your child.
Rabbi, you know all these details are not really in this Torah. That's in a different parsha of Hoshea. You realize that?
Yes, but we're coming to the part that in this Torah that we know. I'm giving you the background to this Torah. Correct. You are correct. But you'll see that what I'm referring to in one moment. We're going to come to this Torah in one moment. One of his children, he had three children. Hashem told him to name the three children. One child he told him to name Loi Ruchama, which means I will no longer show compassion upon the Jewish people. Another child Hashem told him, call him Loi Ami. Jewish people, they're not my nation. Loi Ami. And the third child he called him Yisrael. The word Yisrael, not Yisrael, Yisrael means to disperse. I'm going to exile the Jewish people and disperse them throughout the entire world. So, again, let's review the story. Hoshea was super duper critical of the Jewish people to the point where he said to Hashem, cut your losses, it's time to move on and find a better nation. Hashem was offended. And Hashem said, Hoshea, I got a shidduch for you. A zoyna, marry her. He got married. He had three children. Hashem says, name the three children names that reflect my relationship with the Jewish people. Loi Ruchama, Loi Ami, and Yisrael. Okay? Children grew up, paid tuition, and his wife was unfaithful. And his wife gave him a lot of tzaras. And Hoshea comes back to the Shatran, the Ribbono Shel Olam, and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, you gave me this woman. You told me, you forced me to marry her. I have three children, and their names are not such a, don't reflect very well upon what the situation is. And my wife is a disgrace to this world. So Hashem said to him, okay, divorce her. So he says to Hashem, I can't. I'm too involved. I just can't divorce her. I can't. I had a big problem with her. I need a solution. But divorce is not an option. Because, you know, it's not going to be good for shidduchim, for the children. It's not going to be good for health insurance. It's not going to be good for, you know, my tax return. I have to go get a whole new accountant. If I do, we file separate tax returns. It's just not going to work, Hashem. I, it's not an option. Oh, listen to what you just said. You have a wife that's problematic, and it's not an option to get divorced. And you're coming to me for marriage counseling to help you make it work. What did you say to me a couple of years ago? You said to me, Hashem, you're married to the Jewish people. Chasna, we just spend the whole morning going over the Tanoim and the Ksuba. You're married to the Jewish people, and the relationship has turned sour, and you have advise me, the great grand marriage counselor Hoshea Incorporated, you told me I should get divorced from the Jewish people. Now, you're standing in my shoes. You're also in a difficult situation. You're also married to a woman that's problematic, and you have children that are problematic, and I'm giving you advice to get divorced, and you're telling me not so fast. Now you finally understand. And Hoshea says, Ribbono shel Olam, you're right. You got me. You're right. I now understand. And that's how our Haftorah begins. Hashem, you're right. You are correct. I made a horrible mistake by challenging you, criticizing you, and telling you what to do. You know exactly what you're doing. And he then went on to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he then went on to give over prophecy that the three children that came forth from this marriage, which Hashem told him reflect the problems of his relationship with Klal Yisrael, will be reversed. And the day will come when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have nachas from his children and his relationship with his bride will be restored. And the Haftarah begins, V'hoyah nispa Yisrael, the day will come. There will be nachas, greisa nachas. Kichol hayam asher lo yimad v'lo yisofer. V'hoyah, and here we go. B'mkoyim asher yomer lohem lo yami. This child that you call, that we called, lo yami, which reflects that the relationship is not very good. You're no longer my nation. Ye Omer Lohem, you are my nation. Bnei Kel Choy, you indeed are my nation. We're going to have a name-changing ceremony. And we go to the next child. V'nikbitzu Bnei Yehudu V'nei Yishol Yachta V'sam Lohem Roshecha V'yolu B'nei Oretz. There's going to be kibbutz Goliyos. Ki Godol Yom Yisrael. The second child, whose name was Yisrael, which means dispersal, is going to be kibbutz goliyos. They're going to be ingathered. There's no more going to be a dispersal. And then when it comes to the third child, that we called loiruchama, imru la'achichem ami, tell them you're my nation. V'la'achoseichem, say to them, Ruchama, not Loi Ruchama. Now I will show you mercy. Now that you, Hoshea, finally learned the lesson that don't challenge Hashem. Hashem doesn't need your advice. We don't need people sitting, what's it called, a backseat driver. Okay, we don't need someone giving Hashem advice how to run the world. Don't give me advice and tell me I should chuck the Jewish people and take a replacement. Let me put you in my shoes. Let me put you in a relationship. And then let me give you advice to divorce your wife. And you're going to say to me, it's impossible. And then you're going to realize you have to work with what you have. And indeed, when you work with what you have, you'll come away with gold. You'll come away with ruchama, amiatem. Godol Yom Yisrael, the day of ingathering. It's not going to be a dispersal godless. It's going to be kibbutz goliyos. This is how the Haftorah begins. I want to suggest that the beginning of the Haftorah directly corresponds to the beginning of the parasha. There always has to be a relationship between the parasha and the Haftorah. How does the parasha begin? You're going to count the Jewish people again? Again? We already did this twice. How many times does Hashem need to count the Jewish people? What's going on here? So what does Rashi answer? Yeah, because of the chiba, the love that Hashem has for the Jewish people, mechibasan, Hashem counts them three times. The first time he counted them at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim. The second time Hashem counted them in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel. And the third time is when Hashem decided to rest his permanent divine presence upon the Jewish people. Three events. This child, the children of Hoshea, have their three children. One child is called Yisrael, which means literally means dispersal, golos. Egypt, our stay in Mitzrayim, is the prototype. It is the dugma par excellence of golos. Yitzias Mitzrayim is kibbutz golios. It's the dugma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking us out of exile and bringing us to Eretz Yisrael and a stopover of Matan Torah on the way. Yisrael, the Jewish people, were originally scattered. Hoshea had a child whose name was Yisrael, which represents they were scattered. The Jewish people are in Golis, but don't worry. The day will come, Gadol Yoim Yisrael, the day of when Yisrael will be taken in, as it says, V'nikmetzu b'nei Yehudu v'nei Yisrael yachtav v'samu l'cham roish echad v'alum in aretz. Chiba, the love will be restored. So the first counting was the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It corresponds to the child Yisrael, which, although his name reflects Golos, Hashem says that will be reversed. The second was the Chet HaEgel. What happened in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel? Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hedef mimenu ve'ashmidem. Let go of me. Let me obliterate them. I will show them no mercy. And Moshe Rabbeinu, after being mispalel to Hashem and pulling out all of his cards, Zichor li Avraham li Yitzchak li Yaakov. Finally, Hashem says, "Okay, I will show you mercy." Vayir Hashem, vayikro Hashem kel rachum v'chanun. Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim, whereas Hashem originally said, Loi ruchama. Hedef mimeni ve'ashmideim, Hashem changed his mind. Hashem taught Moshe the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim. We went from Loi Ruchama to Ruchama. Hashem counted us. Nochama. After the Chet HaEgel, after Hashem reversed his decision and gave us the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim, Hashem counted us to show his Chiba for Klal Yisrael. And what's the third time? When he now comes to rest his divine presence upon the Jewish people. And this corresponds to the third child of Hoshea. B'mkoyim asher yo'omer lohem, lo ami atem. Ami, you're my nation. You are my nation. If you're my nation, we belong together. Hashem will rest his divine presence only amongst us because we are his nation. The chiba of the minyan of this week's parasha corresponds to Ami Atem. So we're trying over here to create this parallel between the Haftorah and the parasha. The parasha begins with a chut hamishulosh of chiba. The chiba is expressed in counting money. People love to count money. Mishnah Berurah says, you should say every word of Psuki the Zimra, every word of Davening, the same way you would count every dollar bill. When people count, they like to count. They count very slowly, carefully. They don't want to miss one single bill. When you daven, every single word counts. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he counts every member of Klal Yisrael, he is showing his chiba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed a triple dosage of chiba for the Jewish people. And Rashi illustrates the triple dosage with the three times that we were counted, and this corresponds exactly to the story of Hoshea, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Hoshea I will reverse the connotation, the implied kind of message of anger in the name of your three children from klala libracha. Okay, let's go now to another idea. Let's talk about the Degolim. This week's parasha, we are presented with the mitzvah to position ourselves around the Mishkan in very precise location, a very precise designated area. Every single person in Klal Yisrael had a place, had a makom. Every shevet, all 12 shvatim were told to encamp around Machane Shechina, around the Mishkan, when they encamped in the desert for 40 years. As they traveled 48 journeys. When they came to rest in a particular location, they were told to encamp in a very precise location relative to the other Shvatim. And likewise, as they traveled in the desert, as they traveled in formation, they marched. It wasn't just a haphazard riot. There was order. There was a marching of order as they proceeded to journey in the desert to their destination. And this is captured in the concept called Degolim, which we loosely translate as flags. And indeed, Rashi says in the Pasuk that the flags are described with osos. There shall be, each shevet shall have an os, a sign. And on this Rashi explains what is the deeper meaning of the Degolim, these osos, these signs that we are instructed to make for ourselves. Let me turn to the page. Give me one moment. After we count in Shlishi, it's the beginning of Shlishi in Perik Beis Pasuk Beis Ish Al Digloi Veosos Leves Avosam Yachanu Bnei Yisrael Mineged Saviv LaOrel Moed Yachanu. Rashi, without going through all of the details of this complex pasuk, Rashi comments on the word osos, be'os shemosar lohem Yaakov avihem. I skipped the Rashi, let me go back. The beginning of the pasuk, osos, kol degel yiyeh loy os. Every single degel, which can mean either every tribe or every group of tribes, has an oath. Here we mean to really a tribe. Every tribe has a flag. It's something physical, a mappa, a shmata, a tablecloth, a piece of cloth, tzivua that is dyed a particular color, tuluya boy, tzivoy shel zeh loy ki tzivoy shel zeh. Tseva kol echad ki gavon is each the tseva of each flag is equal to the color avnoi hakivua b'choshen umitoich kach yakir kol echad es digloi. Rashi's first interpretation tells that the Degolim was something physical. They had some type of pole, and on the pole they attached a piece of cloth, and the piece of cloth had a unique color. And the color matched the color of the stone that represented that particular tribe in the Choshen of the Kohen Gadol.
So we're saying they took their cue from the Choshen.
Correct. The Kohen Gadol wears the Choshen, the breastplate, and on the breastplate there are 12 stones. Each stone corresponds to one of the tribes, and each one of these 12 stones has a unique color. They match the color of their flag to the color of the stone. They analyze the color of the stone. They go produce a dye that matches that color. They take a piece of cloth and they dye the cloth exactly that color. And they put this piece of cloth on top of a pole. And they can now gravitate and they can look at that pole with this color. And they know that's where they belong. It wasn't like the United States of America, red, blue, and white with stars,
no,
stripes.
There were designs on there.
No, not according to Rashi.
Because otherwise,
maybe according to other Rishonim.
For 12 of them, you might need they might be two of the same colors.
No, so you're saying you're very good. Obviously, the fact that Rashi makes this statement indicates that there were 12 different colors.
Different hues.
Obviously, there were different colors. The fact that this was something unique, that this was unique is an indication that it was a different color. That's what you had. That's clearly what Rashi is saying. They're not the same color. There were no two stones on the Choshen that shared the same color. Okay, that's what Rashi says.
But there were Shvatim that were three Shvatim and shared a stone.
No, there weren't.
Yeah.
On the Choshen, there were 12 stones.
Yeah, but what was Charut on it?
The names. You're talking about the ephod. You're talking about the shoulder. On the shoulder was the Avnishim, was Yoist. That was one stone, two stones, which were the same type of stone that had all 12 Shvatim. That's the shoulder.
But no, I'm talking, what was
on the Choshen, there were 12 stones. On each stone was etched the name of the tribe. That's other Rishonim say that. That's not Rashi. It's very possible. Elu ve'ildim elokim chayim. Rashi makes no mention of designs. I know when you go to a nice, beautiful shul, they have stained glass windows, and they have the Yud Beis Shvatim, and they'll show you for Zevulun, they'll show you a fisherman, someone on a ship, and they'll show you everyone has their unique. You go to a shul, you go online, you'll see all the beautiful artwork where we connect the 12 shvatim to the 12 different images, and we imagine that this is what their flags look like in the desert. Possibly according to other Rishonim. I'm just reading you now what Rashi says. Rashi says the flag does not make any mention of any writing, any letters, any words, any designs. It was nothing more than a mappa that was tzavua, the color that matched the color of the stone that was positioned in the choshen of the Kohen Gadol that represented their tribe. There's very likely other Rishonim that say that they were designs, and I think other Rishonim say they were letters. It's like voting in the Israeli elections. If you're a Haredi, they tell you Gimel. If you vote Gimel, you go to Gan Eden. Gimel, Gimel. If you vote anything else, then you go to Gehenna, right? Okay, and if you go look at the Israeli elections, they have these big letters. Gimel, Beis, Aleph, Pei. They have every party has a letter. They tell you, vote Gimel. In America, they tell you, vote Trump. They tell you the name of the candidate. In Eretz Yisrael, they tell you which letter to vote for. They don't tell you the name of the candidate. So some learn that on the Degolim, it was a piece of white cloth, and all what differentiated Shevet Reuven from Shevet Shimon was a letter. What letter? I don't know. Some say they wrote maybe even a few letters. Maybe they wrote Reuven, they wrote Shimon. There are many opinions. The Targum seems to indicate there was nothing physical. We learned this in our English here. The Targum seems to indicate that the Degolim is nothing more than a word which means an arrangement. It doesn't mean something physical. There was no colored flag. It just means everyone should be properly arranged in a unique position. Doesn't mean that you have a, like the Goyim, star stripes banners. You know, it doesn't mean that. It just means everyone should know their place. All right. Then Rashi goes on and gives us another interpretation. This really fits very well with what it says in the Targum. What it means, Be'osos, it doesn't mean that they had actual flags. It means Yaakov Avinu, when he died, or before his death, in his last will and testament, he made Yosef swear that he would take him out of Egypt immediately and bury him in Eretz Canaan. But he also gave them very specific instructions as how his bed was to be carried. Exactly how he wanted his coffin to be transported. And he wanted each particular Shevet to stand in a very precise location. Three Shvatim, he named them, shall stand on the left, three on the right, three in front, three in the back. He told them exactly where they should stand when they carry his coffin to his burial location. This was the Os. And we now open up the record books, we look at the videotape of how they carried Yaakov Avinu's coffin from Mitzrayim to Canaan for burial, and we copy that order. just like in, when, let's say, making up things, just like make believe that when they carried Yaakov's coffin, Reuven stood in the front right. So now, when we encamp in the desert around the Mishkan, Reuven, you will be the front right. This Shevet, you stood by Yaakov on the back center. You're now going to encamp in back center. You stood front left. You now encamp front left. That's what Rashi says. The Osos refers to exactly the way the coffin of Yaakov Avinu was carried when they left Egypt. So it comes out that Rashi is presenting us two very different meanings, ideas, capturing the principle of the Degolim. So why these two ideas? What do they represent? So I want to suggest a bit of a drush. What were the stones of the Choshen used for? To answer questions. It doesn't seem that it happened too often, but the Torah tells us, Chazal tell us, it's in the Pasuk. If you have a question, a dilemma, you don't know what to do, should I marry this girl? Should I not marry the girl? Or the girl goes to the Kohen. Okay, the girl also, Chana, Shiva. The girl says, should I marry him or should I not marry him? He proposed to me. Should I say yes or not? What should I do? You go to the Kohen Gadol. What should I do, Kohen Gadol? This boy, he proposed to me. He's not exactly what I had in mind. Should I marry him anyway? The Kohen Gadol says, I don't know. What do you want from me? Let's ask Hashem. Let's ask the Urim V'Tumim. And they asked the Urim V'Tumim. And they mispalel, and they asked the Urim V'Tumim. And the letters of the Shemois, of the Shvatim, light up. Yes or no? Okay, the letters light up. And somehow, some way, the Kohen Gadol has to decipher the meaning of which letters lit up. If the letters of Reuven light up, marry Reuven. If the letters of Shimon light up, better marry Shimon. Let's say they both light up, marry them both. No, I can't do that. What do you do? The letters light up. So the Kohen Gadol has to decipher what it means. Okay, I'm just joking around with you. Those are not questions of battle. I think it means, should we go to battle? National questions. Every shidduch is a matter of national security. Okay? Every shidduch is more important than national
security.
It's in the pasuk. So you ask, you have a dilemma. Look, well, you know, Pinchas, Eli, she saw Chana. Chana was murmuring. He did not know, is this woman for real or not? So he asked, and lit up the letters, he made a mistake. He had to decipher the letters, and he said, Shikoira, this woman is a drunkard. Shikoira, get rid of her. Send her out. Call in security. Shikoira. And Chana said, you're not a good Kohen Gadol. It's not Shikoira, it's Kishera or Kisara. Get a life. You don't know how to read. You don't know how to decipher. You're not going to let you serve in the decryption, in whatever. No, the.
That's why she put
in the
a
code.
Son,
in
she put a son there.
Okay, so, this is not.
You're not going to be one of the code breakers.
You don't have Ruach HaKodesh. You don't know. Okay, so what kind of question did he ask? He wants to know if she's a homeless person. I mean, that's national security. A woman comes to the Beis HaMikdash. So put it through a metal detector. What are you going and asking the Urim V'Tumim? What's going on over here? Chvesnish. Obviously, these are dvarim ha'imdim beruma shalayla. But in any event, what do you use the Urim V'Tumim for? To ask questions. A question relates to the future. What should I do going forward? What is the second interpretation of Rashi? What is the oisos? Where do you stand relative to Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov's dead.
or Yaakov lechet lemeis, but Yaakov's on his way to burial. Yaakov's gone. He's gone. He's the past. He's old school. He's the old generation. We don't relate to the old generation. We were smarter, right? We're much smarter today. We know how to do things much better. He's old school. He's the past. Well, in Klal Yisrael, the past is gold. The Mesorah, where you come from, Yichus, heritage, legacy. But it's different than the future. Rashi is giving us a very powerful message. Klal Yisrael, as they travel in the desert, and the traveling in the desert is nothing more than a mashal for Klal Yisrael, traveling through Golus. They travel through Golus to their destination of Yemos HaMashiach. We travel through time. The journey of the Jewish people of 40 years in the desert is just a dugma. It's a mashal for the journey of Klal Yisrael through time to reach their destination, to mature, to bring Mashiach. And as we travel, we are instructed, when you travel through time, through your existence, don't forget, you shall be arranged according to the Degolim. You shall have Degolim. Don't forget, there should be Degolim. What's the message? There are two messages. Number one, look to the past. Look back to Yaakov Avinu. Shma bini Musar Avicha, v'alti toish Torah simecha. As you journey through history, don't forget where you come from. And number two, when you need to make decisions going forward, it should be a holy decision. Don't focus on money, kavod, and all the nonsense. You go to the Kohen Gadol, the holiest man in the world, who goes lefnai v'lefnim, and carries on his heart the shemos of Klal Yisrael. A zikaron lefnei Hashem. And when you make a decision, when you have a dilemma, what to do going forward, it should be made b'kedusha uv'tahara. The people that make the decision should be people that are holy people. It should be made with preparation. When the Kohen Gadol has to decipher the letters, he needs Ruach HaKodesh. You just can't, you don't know what the letters mean. You need Ruach HaKodesh. There has to be Kedusha in making a decision what to go, how to go forward. The journey of Klal Yisrael in the desert was done where the Jewish people were arranged according to Degolim. What is a Degel? A Degel, Rashi tells us, either it comes from the Choshen, which rests upon the heart of the Kohen Gadol that goes Lefnai v'Lefnim, or it relates us, takes us back to Yaakov Avinu. The message is, the stones that represented going forward, a decision, what to do, it should be B'Kedusha uv'Tahara. But there has to be balanced and it has to be understood against the backdrop of not forgetting where you come from, your tradition, your legacy. Don't ever lose sight of your past, others. That also carries a major influence in your decision, in your approach to life and going forward, is to always hold before you as you travel the flag or your location, is you always continuously remembering your roots, your shoroshim. It's the golem represent. Put yourself put your mind in a place where you always remember where you came from and where you're going. And your destination is a destination that is decided, is influenced by the Kohen Gadol, the holiest Jew who represents the entire Klal Yisrael in the holiest of places.
Okay, let's go to one more idea, and then we'll talk about Shavuos very quickly. One more at the end of the parasha, which is a fascinating Rashi. The end of this week's parasha, it really, I think, speaks volumes in many, many different ways. End of the parasha, we learn about taking apart the Mishkan. The last Aliyah of Parshas Bamidbar discussed in great detail exactly how the Kohanim would disassemble the Mishkan. The Anani HaKavod have indicated that it's time to travel. Everyone in Klal Yisrael, pack your bags. Go to Amazon, buy some luggage, buy some, you know, all the paraphernalia you need, get some good chargers for your smartphones, get into your electric cars, get going, pack up. And then the Kohanim run to the Mishkan, and they have to now begin a very complex process of disassembling the Mishkan. They gotta take down the Kroshim, they gotta package up the Aron HaKodesh by draping it in the Paroiches and draping it in a garment of Techeles, a garment of Tachash. And they have to disassemble the Shulchan, and there's a Lechem Aponim, and they have to disassemble the Mizbech HaZav, v'chulu, v'chulu. It's a complicated process to package up. You know how much it costs to hire movers today? Okay, that's just the people who do the transportation. They have to go pack. It takes months to pack, to get ready for the move. So Rashi there says that the Kohanim, they are in charge of the disassembling. And the Levim are the movers that come in to do the moving, to actually carry it in the desert. When the Psukim describe taking apart all of the various Kalim, so each Kli, you can analyze this forever, to analyze the unique expressions that are used, and the order, and what it says and what it doesn't say by comparing one thing to the other. I want to focus now on the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach HaNechoshes, when the Kohanim were disassembling the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Pasuk says that before they disassemble the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, they shall take away the ash, the Dishinu Es HaMizbeach. That's the ash thing. First thing is take away the ash. Now let me find the Pasuk. End of the parasha, it's the last Aliyah. They're taking away the ash. Pasuk is Yud Gimel, 13. Friday the 13th. Page 7 of in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel. We're now up to the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the big Mizbeach that all of the Korbanos were offered upon. We have to now travel in the desert. So the Pasuk says, oh, v'dishnu es ha-mizbeach. Take away the ash. Remove the ash. What do you do with the ash? I don't know. I have no idea. It doesn't say what to do with the ash. You bury it in the desert? Maybe. I don't know. It doesn't say. Take it away. And then, uforesu olav beged argamon. Now, it seems that, now the question is, why does it tell you to remove the ash? When we were told to disassemble the menorah, doesn't the menorah also have wicks and oil, leftover wicks and oil? Doesn't that also need to be removed, to be cleansed?
Isn't that a given?
Oh, it's a given. What about the mizbeach hanechoshe and azov? They offered ketores. Isn't there ash on the Mizbeach HaZov that needs to be removed? No, there's no mention. Obviously, the Torah here is not to go tell you every little single detail. The Torah is only telling you critical elements. Not every single detail needs to be mentioned. So by the menorah, we're not going to go mention exactly what happened by the menorah. We're not going to go mention exactly what they did by the Mizbeach HaZov. Doesn't tell you every single little detail. But it stands out that it does talk about removing the ash of the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. So Rashi seems to be bothered by this question. Rashi in Pasuk Gimel writes, V'dishnu es ha-Mizbeach, Mizbech ha-nechoshes v'dishnu yitulu es ha-deshen me'olof. Take away the ash. Truma ha-deshen. And then it says, uforisu olof beged argamon, spread upon the mizbech a purple garment to protect it as it travels in the desert. Rashi here says something very interesting. V'esh sheyardo min ha-shamayim revutza tachas ha-beged kari b'shas ha-masois. Ve'eino soraftoi shohoyu koifin olecha pisachter shel nechoshes, a cone, a plate of copper. Now this whole thing in general is very bizarre anyway, whatever this all means over here. On the Mizbeach HaNechoshes there was an Eish Min HaShemayim. That has to be packaged up. The Eish Min HaShemayim is not your ordinary Eish, because that you extinguish, or that you have to go put in some type of container, shouldn't get burnt. Here, there's the Mizbeach. On the Mizbeach, there's a fire. It's not your ordinary fire. It's the Eish Min HaShemayim. We have to package it. How do we package it? So Rashi says they put some type of iron dome. Copper dome. A copper dome. I'm not talking about politics, I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry to disappoint you. Okay. They put upon it a copper dome. A pesach der shel nechoshes. Okay, a copper dome was put upon it to shelter this Eish Min HaShamayim. Why copper? Anyway, it's not lethal. It's not going to burn anyway anyone. I don't know. I have no idea.
I think they wrapped it up in cloth.
And then it says on top of that, on top of the copper dome, they put a garment of purple. Probably got very hot. How come it didn't burn? Obviously, we're not dealing over here with
distributes the heat.
So I don't know, it makes it even worse, right? The copper distributes the heat, so therefore the purple garment that went on top should be burnt. All right, that's not our topic. But the Sifsei Chacham here says something which I think opens up Rashi very wide and also opens up something very, very deep. Very, very deep concept. The Sifsei Chachamim elaborates and he says, let me find it over here. I'm using the wrong chumash. The chumash I'm using doesn't even, what I prepared from, had a different, the full version. This is, okay, it doesn't have it in this chumash. Okay, I'll tell it to you outside. Not a problem. But if you look in this chumash, it has the Sifsei Chacham. He basically explains Rashi. He says, that's why it had to say, remove the ash. Because when the Mizbeach is functioning, al mekoymoi, you couldn't see the Eish Min HaShamayim. The Eish Min HaShamayim was camouflaged in the ash. On the Mizbeach, there are korbanos burning continuously. And there's ash from the korbanos, and there's an Eish Min HaShamayim. Now, this is really subject to a whole discussion in the Gemara, but we're going to just take it on a very, very watered down version, and it means whatever it means, because anyway, this whole thing is supernatural. On the Mizbeach, the way the Sifsei Chacham explains, at least during the time of the Mishkan, I don't know if it was exactly like this in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, but let's just see what it says here. There was an Eish Min HaShamayim. If you would go and be a tourist and come to the Mishkan, I want to see it. I want to see this miraculous fire that's burning on the Mizbeach. Guess what? There will be nothing to see. Sorry to disappoint you. There's nothing to take a picture of. Why not? Because since in this same location there are other korbanos that are burning, and those korbanos produce ash, the ash obscures or blocks the view of the Eish Min HaShamayim. It's obscured. It's camouflaged. It's hidden.
So then it's really never visible.
Exactly. It's never visible. But it's there. It's there. Now it's time to travel. We're not taking with us in the desert the ash. That's not part of the things. The ash we're going to bury in the desert. But we have to package up in a nice box. We have to package up the ash Min HaShamayim.
It's not visible then either.
So what do we do? No, we make it visible. How do you make it visible? You remove the ash.
But then you package it.
Then, once you remove the ash, now we can see the Eish Min HaShamayim.
Now we can package it up in a copper dome and we can spread upon it a purple cloth. So that's why it says only by the Mizbeach, v'dishnu es ha-mizbeach. It doesn't say this by the Menorah. It doesn't say this by the Mizbeach ha-zohav. It's because they don't have an Eish Min HaShemayim. They have regular fire. So we don't have to go tell you all the nitty-gritty details of removing the ash, removing the coals, the ash. Just get it ready to go. Whatever you need to do, you do. But here we have to package the Eish Min HaShemayim. And the way to, I don't see any Eish Min HaShemayim. Well, if you will remove the coal, the ash, then you will see the Eish Min HaShemayim. Then you can take it and you can put it into you can safely deposit it in a copper dome, and you can then cover it with a beged shel techeles. Fascinating. So what comes out? It comes out a lot of chidushim from this. A lot of chidushim. Number one, when the Jewish people traveled in the Midbar, there was more of a revelation of Hashem's divine presence than there was than we were safe and secure at home. Because when we were sitting safe and secure in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, you couldn't even see the Eish Min HaShemayim. It was there, but it wasn't visible. When Klal Yisrael journeyed, they traveled. They needed that chizuk to know that Hashem is with us. The Eish Min HaShemayim was nearer. It was revealed. They took away the ash. And now you can see the Eish Min HaShemayim. Golos is horrible. Golos we suffer. How much Jewish blood has been spilled and lost in Golos? Can't even calculate such a thing. Just this last week, look how many people are victims of terror. How many people are psychologically damaged. People died. Forget people died. People died. 7, 8 people died. People have been wounded, have been injured. People are living now in a matzav of terror. Every time we're macho. We live in America. Oh, we think we're safe and secure. Eretz Yisrael, they live with a pachad. You hear a siren. They live with a pachad. Golus is horrific. But in Golus, what? Pikuach nefesh, you can take a weapon, take a smartphone on Shabbos. You should take a smartphone. I have a feeling you should know that a lot of people not I don't get into politics now. But it's pikuach nefesh, no question about it. But in Golus, with all of the horror, this pasuk reveals to us there's an extra special Gilui Shechina in Golos that you don't have in times of peace. It's a verse in the Pasuk. The Eish Min HaShemayim is Hashem Shechina, resting. It's a darug of Hashem Shechina. When everything is Kedasu Chedin, everything is peaceful, you don't see it. But when we have to travel in the desert, which is symbolic of Golos, v'dishnu es ha-mizbech, take away that ash, you'll see the Gilu Shechina. That's one element. Another element. What did the Kohanim do? What's the first avoida every single day in the Beis HaMikdash? Terumas HaDeshen. Daf Yomi, not so long ago, describing all the details. There was a whole elaboration. Took a pious, first they took no pious, then a pious. They thought no one wanted to come. People didn't want to come. It's the end of an avodah, the beginning of an avodah. Terumas HaDeshen is a very complicated avodah. What kind of clothing do you wear for Terumas HaDeshen? You wear your best clothing, or you wear not your best clothing? What is Terumas HaDeshen? Gilui Shechina. When the Kohen ascends every morning to take away the ash, what is he doing? There's an element. It was not what I'm saying is not accurate, but it's still true. There's an element of when you take away the ash, you megale the Eish Min HaShemayim. The day begins
Every single day's avoda begins with, first thing is, Moida ani lefanecha melechai v'kayom, shechzarto bi nishmasi b'chemla. Rabba emunasecha. Every single day you begin with gilui shechina. Peel away the hester panim and acknowledge the gilui shechina. Hashem is here. And then you can proceed. The avoida of trumas hadeshen is what? The dish in Uyas HaMizbeach. For what purpose? This Rashi reveals the soid. The soid is, when you take away the deshen, now I can see the Eish Min HaShemayim. And now, in this context, we can package it up nicely in a nice cardboard box and go to the mailbox and, you know, Avenue M and send it off back to Amazon. The Gilui Shechina. It's Gilui Shechina. The avoida of Trumas Hadeshen is an act. Bimegale v'shchina. That's how the day begins. The first thing you need to do in the morning, peel away all of the camouflage. Focus, what's the MS? And then, I know the secrets. I know all the soidas. Now we can go into the first thing the President of the United States does in the morning, Elif Alfi Avdolis. I don't know if this president does it, but so back in the day, that's what they always said. They bring him this intelligence report. All the secrets. All the secrets that are going on in the world. All the dirty business that's going on in the world. The intelligence briefing in the morning when the president eats breakfast are the greatest secrets in the world. Of this earth that are known to man are presented to the President of the United States. That's pretty scary. Well, guess where that comes from? Lahavdil Elif Alfi Avdolis, the Trumas Hadeshen. The first thing you do in the morning is, I'll tell you a secret. There's a Ribbono Shel Olam here. Really? 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 V'dishenu es hamizbeach. Take away the ash. Let me show you what's really going on under the hood. And now when you know that, okay, now the circus can begin. Now we can proceed and we can play football. When you know in your conscience, your subconscious, you know the MS, okay, it will influence your day, your decision-making, your approach going forward. Let me show you one vart going to Shavuos. We're not going to learn on Sunday, obviously. Sunday, we're not going to learn. We never learn on Sunday anyway. The next time we're going to come back is going to be Mirta Shem on Wednesday, right? On Wednesday. So let me just show you one quick vart in honor of Shavuos. One quick vart. Shavuos is called the Chag HaShavuos. We count 50 days and we count 7 weeks. If we count 7 weeks, we've come now to the seventh week. Don't you think that the festival should be a week? If there's only one day of Shavuos, if that's the case, we should call the holiday the Chag Hayomim. You count 50 days, we reach the climax, so we celebrate day 50. If we count two things, we count 50 days and we count 7 weeks. If we're only going to celebrate one day for achieving the success of making it to the finish line, then we should call the festival the Chag Hayomim, the festival of the days. Usfartim l'chayim rachash tisru chamishim yoim, 50 days. So we've reached day 50, one day. No, we don't want to call it the Chag Hayomim. We want to call it the Chag HaShavuos, the festival of weeks. Really? So then we should celebrate a whole week. 7 weeks. Now we've made it to the end. It should be 7 weeks. And yet we only celebrate one day. How could that possibly be? So the answer is, there is one area of Shavuos that goes on for a whole week. And that is Tashlumin. What do we mean by tashlumin? Every one of the festivals, you have an obligation to bring a korban. Oilas ri'iya, shalmei chagiga. And ideally, it should be done on the first day. What happens if you don't do it the first day? Well, if it's Sukkos and Pesach, the festival goes on for 7 days. So every day is a great day. It's part of the holiday. But Shavuos, one would argue that once you don't bring, let's say, your korban shalomim on day one, avar zman batel korbanoi. Once the day is over, it's too late. But yet we have a drasha that tells us that you can bring your korbanos that relate to the festival for 7 days. That's why it's called Chag HaShavuos and not the Chag HaYomim. Because indeed we do celebrate Shavuos for 7 days. One day is the real day, and the other 6 days, it's not Chol HaMoed, it's better than Chol HaMoed. You can do whatever you want. It's mamish chol, but it's kodesh because it's tashlumin. That's the essence of Shavuos. The essence of Yom Matan Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man in this world. The essence of Torah is unlimited chances. It's like playing a video game and you get out. You have three chances, right? You put in a quarter. Remember the old days, put in a quarter. And you have three outs. After the third out, the game is over. You got to put in another quarter. Matan Torah, you get an infinite number of outs. You can try again, 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 again. It's infinite. We learned yesterday in the Akdamos. Akdamos spells out clear as day the difference between a human being and a malach. A malach has one chance, and that is it. That's what it says in Akdamos. Malach gets one chance. He's created to sing Shira on a particular day at a particular time. If the malach loses out, he misses, too bad. You lose. Game over. There is no more chances. Nothing to discuss. There's no recourse. You can't file an appeal. You're done. A human being, the piyut Akdamos says, nonstop. The malach only says shira once. A person, you say kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. How many times do you say it in davening? 4 times. And then shachris and mincha. And tomorrow and the next day and the next day, your entire life. Each time, try to do a little bit better. And what does it represent? It represents your day, your whole Avodas Hashem should be, try again, try to do tomorrow even better. Keep on trying again and again. The essence of Yom Matan Torasenu by design, it's Chag Shavuos. It's a festival of the weeks. We counted 7 weeks, and now we're going to celebrate for a week. What do you mean it's only one day? Yeah, strive for perfection on day one. But if you don't make it, don't worry. You got a whole week. It's Chag Shavuos. Tashlumin. Tashlumin. You could bring your korbanos the whole week. That's a mashal for life. Strive to make that every single day, that day of Yom Tov. And just in case the day goes by and you say, you know, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect. Okay, don't worry. Try again tomorrow. By design, the Yom Tov is not called Chag HaYomim, even though that's what it should be called because we only celebrate one day, which means we're focusing on, there are two elements to Sfiras HaOmer. Shavuos is the culmination of the Omer. The Omer is broken down into two parts, days and weeks. And it's also Sheva Shabbos Tzmimos. Two elements. So if, what do you want, now we come to the end. So how should we celebrate? We should celebrate with a big one day, day 50, and corresponding to the counting of the weeks, we should celebrate an entire week. So no, we're not going to celebrate a whole week. Okay, fine, you don't want. But don't call the Yom Tov the Chag Shavuos, then call the Chag Hayomim. If you only want to celebrate one day. No, that's exactly the point of what Yom Tov of Shavuos is all about. It's to tell person, Sheva, Yipol, Sheva, I forgot the pasuk. Tzadik, he falls down 7 times, Vakon. Although the tzaddik, he falls down, try again. The Yom Tov is a week. There's the day, which is the ideal. It's the yearning for perfection. But you have a parachute, you have a backup. A backup your whole life. Matan Torah is the koyach, to always given the ability, the koyach, to improve and come back and be perfect. Okay, our boys say thank you very much for coming and listening. Have a wonderful Shabbos, a wonderful Yom Tov, a Yom Tov of Simcha, and Samachta Bechagecha. May we hear Besoyrois, Toivois, Yeshuois, Venechomois. Achayne b'nei Yisrael, Adosim Atzuv HaShivya, Ha'ayin b'n b'n b'yam b'n b'yabasha, Ha'amakon b'rachav b'n b'n b'yasein Yisrael Avachim, B'n b'n b'gula hasha b'agla b'zman p'n b'n 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 Wonderful Shabbos, you'll be well, everyone. Zagazot. Shabbat Shalom, a good Yom Tov.